It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
And this actually goes directly to what Paula was describing, the situation of apparently robo-signers who have no idea what they're signing, have never looked at anything, saying, we believe he's behind. It's good enough for me because I think it's true.
Virginia Homeowners in Crisis, a forum on foreclosure fraud, sponsored by Housing Opportunities Made Equal on November 17, 2010, reveals systemic problems in the state's foreclosure process that plague homeowners and give Virginia the 15th highest foreclosure rate in the country. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn how the Federal Reserve Board wants to weaken the legal hand of homeowners while 75% of the country wants to strengthen it. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show was supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 108, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Hundreds of consumer, civil rights, legal aid, community, labor, and public interest groups representing homeowners urged the Federal Reserve Board to withdraw a proposed rule that would destroy a key legal tool to unwind illegal loans and avoid foreclosure. According to Margot Saunders at the National Consumer Law Center, the proposal would eliminate the single most powerful legal tool that homeowners currently have to stop wrongful foreclosures, the federal right to rescind an illegal loan. The proposal would create a major obstacle to remedying an illegal mortgage by imposing new requirements which would prevent most homeowners from being able to rescind. The proposal also would lower standards for accurate loan information and allow lenders to understate loan payments by as much as $100 per month. According to Michael Calhoun, president of the Center for Responsible Lending, the proposed rule not only weakens protections against predatory lending and foreclosures, but it would give lenders more freedom to provide inaccurate information about the cost of their loans. In other news, on November 16, 2010, Americans for Financial Reform released a poll showing that voters strongly favor requiring financial institutions to do more to help homeowners stay in their homes. With 1.2 million foreclosures filed in the first half of 2010, one in seven borrowers are delinquent or in foreclosure. If nothing is done, as many as 13 million Americans will lose their homes to foreclosure. Public opinion strongly supports a change. People correctly hold the biggest Wall Street banks responsible for the financial and economic crisis, want more done to prevent foreclosures, and support requiring lenders to modify mortgages so more borrowers can stay in their homes. 72% of voters say elected officials are doing too little to prevent foreclosures and have not been tough enough on banks and mortgage lenders who violate rules or break the law. 75% of voters support requiring financial institutions to work with homeowners to renegotiate mortgages, a support which extends across party and ideological lines, including majority support from self-identified Tea Party voters and across every region of the country. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
It's time for the answer to our weekly quiz called, Is That Legal? Last week, we gave you a legal question and three possible answers, one of which was incorrect. Here's last week's question. Which two statements about spousal support or alimony in Virginia are correct? A. You can get spousal support even if you're not married, but have lived with someone for long enough. B. If you are married, you don't need to file for a divorce to get spousal support. Or C. Spousal support usually is paid until the person being paid remarries or dies. The correct answers are B. If you are married, you don't need to file for divorce to get spousal support. And C, spousal support usually is paid until the person being paid remarries or dies. Virginia is not a palimony state, and unmarried people who live with each other, even for many years, don't owe each other any duty of support when they separate. Later in the show, we'll give you this week's quiz. Is that legal? For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault.
On November 17, 2010, Housing Opportunities Made Equal sponsored a forum on foreclosure fraud, Virginia Homeowners in Crisis, in response to systemic problems in the state's foreclosure process that plague homeowners and give Virginia the 15th highest foreclosure rate in the country. Connie Chamberlain, president and CEO of Housing Opportunities Made Equal, explained the issue.
You all have heard about all of the faulty foreclosures that are going on throughout the country. We read about it somewhere every day. Most of what you hear is about what happens in judicial foreclosure states, where in order to foreclose, among other things, you have to file an affidavit that swears that what you're submitting is true and accurate and all that. Virginia is not a judicial foreclosure state. And what that means, among other things, is that there is no third-party review of the process. And there really isn't any data out there about what goes on with foreclosures. Homes experience and the experience of counselors and advocates throughout the state is that there are all kinds of issues with faulty foreclosures and faulty servicing. We certainly believe that foreclosure represents a necessary process. If someone is not living up to the terms of what they promised to do, foreclosure may be an appropriate response. But I think we would also all agree that it is not appropriate for Virginia homeowners who have been paying their mortgages to lose their homes because someone has made a calculating error or misapplied a payment.
In October 2010, the attorneys general of all 50 states announced an investigation into whether mortgage companies made misleading or fraudulent statements to foreclose on struggling borrowers and whether industry employees, so-called robo-signers, signed off on thousands of foreclosures every month without reviewing the files as legally required. Terry Hunt, a Richmond homeowner who has faced foreclosure three times, tells his story.
All right, hi. My name's Terry Hunt. This is my wife, Donna. Thank y'all for giving us this opportunity. Basically, we closed last October. City Mortgage was our mortgage company. 3 months after we closed, we started receiving letters from City Mortgage saying we hadn't paid. Lend America was the new mortgage company. We contacted them to get the two to work together to try to fix this thing. And we found out Lend America had gone out of business and sold the loan to Loan Care. So we tried to get Loan Care and City together to work this out. And in that process, City Mortgage tried to foreclose. The only way we found out about it was in our local newspaper. We've never missed a payment with either company, so we attempted to make payments to both companies for a while. That just didn't work out. So we decided to get Mr. Crumby, Jason, to represent us and try to help us work through this thing. since then, we've had two other attempts at foreclosure. Again, both times have been posted in our local paper. We tried ourselves to get a resolution, but we failed. We couldn't get anybody to really work with us on this thing. Still today, we have not missed a payment. We are small business owners. Credit is hurt. Prior to this, we had 7 to 21 employees. We have two, my wife and I, now. We can't bid jobs because I can't get the lending or equipment that I need to do the jobs because of what's happened.
Mortgage companies have been foreclosing at a breakneck pace and freely ignoring the legal niceties required under the law, skirting proper procedures, and inaccurately and improperly trying to take back homes. Jason Crumbine, a Richmond consumer attorney and lawyer for Terry and Donna Hunt, found massive fraud and theft pervading their case and thousands like it.
The short version of the Hunt story is that when they refinanced, instead of sending the money, we are now suspecting, based upon additional documents that I've found since filing the original lawsuit, that the mortgage company, LendAmerica, their settlement company may have actually absconded with the money. There's actually a related lawsuit in Eastern District of New York in which the title insurance company is seeking a declaratory judgment that they do not have to cover all of these mortgages because of the systemic fraud. It appears that all of the loans that LendAmerica closed between approximately the middle of September and the middle of November of 2009, instead of paying off the old mortgage company for the Hunts, that was City Mortgage, they just pocketed the money. Now, this is not LendAmerica. Right. LendAmerica filed bankruptcy. This is LendAmerica. Lend, L-E-N-D. I want to be clear that LendAmerica, who filed bankruptcy, does not appear to have been involved in this. I found no fingerprints of theirs. But LendAmerica, with an E, I'm not entirely certain what happened. The lawsuit in the Eastern District of New York alleges that roughly $100 million worth of mortgages, they just pocketed the money. The facts that I've uncovered in the Hunt's case look very similar, and it may be one of the mortgages where that is actually what happened. We have a copy of the front of a check, and we have a copy of a FedEx tracking label, but FedEx has no record of having ever logged that package in, and we have not been able to get a copy of the back of the check showing that it was ever negotiated. So I don't know exactly what happened, and it looks like plus or minus $211,000 of the mortgage was stolen. I don't know about y'all, but if somebody steals $500 or $1,000 from me, yeah, it's painful, but I can get over it. $211,000, I have no idea how I would fix that.
In July 2009, the first legislation to address the mortgage crisis was enacted, much of it too little, too late. The law includes $3.9 billion so homeowners can refinance mortgages, but ultimately depends on voluntary action by mortgage companies, an approach which has had limited effect. Only 24% of seriously delinquent borrowers are working toward preventing foreclosure, and foreclosures still outnumber loan modifications by 3-1. Patricia Leonard, another Richmond homeowner, detailed her frustration with mortgage modification.
We're sending all the information. The plan says that we would pay three monthly payments at a reduced rate for 3 months, and after which our loan would be permanently modified. We sent in the first payment, which started August of 2009. We sent that in July. We sent September's payment in August, October's payment in September, and that was the third payment, so we expected our loan to be modified. After paying 12 trial payments and being told the same thing over and over again, some of the money was being misapplied. I was told that the activity on our account was at a standstill until the modification was approved. In April of 2010, we finally received a FedEx package saying that we qualified for permanent modifications. So I called back on July 16th. I was told that the Bank of America had approved our modification, our permanent loan modification, but the investor had came back on July the 15th and declined it because we were too much of a financial risk. I was in disbelief. I actually didn't believe her, so I called back and spoke to another representative who said the same thing, that we were considered too much of a financial risk. At that time, she said that the bank was holding $22,529.39 in a holding account, and that we were 7 to 7.5 months past due.
As Patricia Leonard learned to her dismay, homeowners can be working with someone at the mortgage company to modify the loan and then find out the company still is foreclosing. Even Ms. Leonard's HUD-certified mortgage default counselor with Housing Opportunities Made Equal, Felicia Bowling, finds mortgage companies almost impossible to work with.
The clients keep sending paperwork after paperwork, and it's never being received, or it's getting lost, or they didn't receive the facts. So I don't get a lot of servicing issues. Ms. Leonard's defense, we have been trying to get a modification for the last 2 years. So I got her back in 2008, and to this day, like she said, they wanted her. She contacted me again because they wanted her to sign backdated document. I called Chris Walker of Bank of America, and he stated the reason that they want her to sign the backdated documents is because of federal law. Now, I haven't, you know, it went into any books to try to prove that, but they said the federal law states that your trial period, it's only 3 months, and after the 3 months is when they backdated her documents. So her trial payment was from, was it July, August, September?
August, September, and October.
And November, it should have converted over to a regular modification. Where in her situation, it didn't convert because she had been on the trial payment for almost a year, 2 years mm-hmm. almost. So, and that goes back to the systemic piece of it. Mm-hmm. We keep you keep calling, you keep emailing people, oh, the package went out, and then you should have went out, actually, and it never got out, or, you know, we did, you know, receive a package but didn't have all the documents, so it was always something going on as to why they was not receiving a package. But with her situation, she was sending all the information, and I followed her through the whole process, so I know everything was being sent and done accordingly, but they fought me tooth and nails, too.
Regina Cheney, housing education specialist with Housing Opportunities Made Equal, has had similar experiences with the take-it-or-leave-it attitude of mortgage companies during a loan modification process.
I was actually just with a client who had that very same problem. She actually got a modification which was due yesterday, but 3 weeks ago we called the lender to really verify the payment history, because they were saying that she was 20 months behind,
right,
and she believes she's only 6 months behind, which is a big difference.
Right.
And so in requesting the payment history, we were told that, of course, we would get that. Well, of course, today we call, and they said it was sent out on yesterday, which was the day that the modification was due. But so I said, well, we're still trying to get the modification in because she wants it. She agrees with it. She just doesn't agree with the arrearage. And so she doesn't want to sign it if the 20 months is not valid, and that's what she's disputing. So, of course, they're saying, well, you know, if she would just sign it, well, if she signs it, that's the whole point.
These experiences are common. One reason home mortgage modifications are so rare is that a foreclosure with sloppy paperwork is so cheap. If the true cost of a foreclosure with proper paperwork had to be paid, mortgage modifications might become more common. Paula Sherman, Education and Training Coordinator at Housing Opportunities Made Equal, explains that improper mortgage servicing is the rule, not the exception.
There are many more, and they are just representative of the systemic problem that is facing us today with regard to the foreclosure crises. The HUD talked about a servicing issue. They have made mortgage payments. They are not past due, yet the lender managed to initiate foreclosure action against the property. And lately in the news, you've heard about the issue of robo-signing. That means they push paper through without validating the legitimacy of the document.
And in some cases, mortgage companies simply ignore the courts and the law, file invalid documents, and foreclose on people with false information or with information that they have no clue whether it's true or not. Richmond consumer attorney Jason Crumbine had to sue not once, but twice to stop an illegal foreclosure.
In addition to representing the Hunts, I have another client, a fellow by the name of Costello, who suffered similar financial distresses as the second lady. Mr. Costello filed a Chapter 13 bankruptcy in 2006. 1986, and that was in an effort to save his house. And things went along just fine until he fell behind on his house again. The mortgage company asked for permission to foreclose from the bankruptcy court, and he was able to work out a deal, and he kept to the deal. But the mortgage company decided that that just wasn't good enough. He wasn't paying enough money fast enough. So they literally ignored the payments that he had made, the agreement that he had made with them, all the payments that he had made, and continued to press forward in early 2009 with a foreclosure. It was only through my intervention in filing lawsuits in both state and federal court that I was able to straighten out the problem of the fact that he had made every single one of his payments to his mortgage company, Chase Home Finance, and we were able to force the mortgage company to discontinue the foreclosure. And this actually goes directly to what Paula was describing, the situation of apparently robo-signers who have no idea what they're signing, have never looked at anything, saying, "We believe he's behind. It's good enough for me because I think it's true." Mr. Costello had not missed a payment since he made that deal. As a result, we ended up literally being forced to file lawsuits in both state and federal court, and it was only after that the state and federal courts got involved and started asking questions that the mortgage company, in that case Chase Home Finance, decided that they would end up backing down and stopping the foreclosure.
Mortgage foreclosure fraud has become so widespread that the Virginia Poverty Law Center and other groups have filed a brief with the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit to bring attention to the issue. Paula Sherman at Housing Opportunities Made Equal finds problems in the system from start to finish.
Servicing abuses have been around for a while, and I can tell you they are very difficult to resolve for many reasons. One is because many of the servicing abuses have not been defined, they have not been recognized as a problem, and as a result, there's been no effort to address it at any level. Second to that is the problem of loss mitigation. In a recent report by the Center for Responsible Lending, cited that 60% of homeowners who were seriously past due, 90 days or more past due, had not been reviewed for any type of loss mitigation program or service. And then, of course, the foreclosure process itself. We kind of mentioned the robo-signing. Homeowners in Virginia, they have a very small window to address and resolve the foreclosure that they may be in. And that creates a whole wave of problems. When you have a dual track of activity occurring, you have the homeowner on one end working feverishly to right the wrong, to try to fix the situation, while on the other hand, you have the servicer and the substitute trustee racing at top speed to finish the foreclosure.
Virginia is a non-judicial foreclosure state. Protections which exist in judicial foreclosure states are totally lacking in Virginia. Housing Opportunities Made Equal's Paula Sherman.
And all of this happens because, as Connie mentioned, there's no oversight. There's no checks and balances. And servicers and all the other players can pretty much, they run amok. And also there's very few consequences, if any, for the mistakes and the errors that they make. Whether they're just simple error or negligence, there's little to no recourse for homeowners who are on the wrong end of those transactions.
Al Lewis, a columnist for Dow Jones Newswire in Denver, perfectly captured the essence of the problem in his article, A Foreclosure Sitcom. First, we learned America's biggest banks couldn't properly lend. Then we learned they couldn't keep themselves solvent without taxpayer assistance. Then we learned they couldn't effectively work with troubled borrowers in a bursting housing bubble. And now we've learned they don't even know how to foreclose. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, this is your host, Marty Wegbright.
It's time for our weekly quiz called, Is That Legal? We give you a legal question and three possible answers, one of which is incorrect, and we give the correct answers next week.
If you're the first to email the two correct answers, we'll post your name on our show's website and send you a free copy of the Virginia State Bar's Handbook on Your Legal Rights and Responsibilities. Here's this week's question. Which two things describe how foreclosure is done in Virginia? A. You must be sent a written notice by certified or registered mail telling you the date and place of the sale at least 14 days in advance. B. The foreclosure sale must be advertised in a newspaper of general circulation before the sale. Or C, the foreclosure must be done through the court system. If you know the two correct answers, email them by Friday to marty@cvlas.org and be next week's winner. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral four, all.net. Then click the contributor link. Then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Two things are certain, death and taxes, and the complexities of probating an estate make both seem equally complicated. Join us next week when private attorney George Shanks, Commissioner of Accounts for Page County, Virginia, and President-elect of the Virginia State Bar, takes the fear and mystery out of probate and the administration of estates. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.